I'm Shannon Sprague with NOAA. Just a reminder, thank you, Nick. That was a great introduction. I can't think of a better way to kick that off and to remind us how important environmental education really is to the grand scheme of protecting and restoring the Chesapeake Bay. So thank you for that. Many of my slides that I'm going to go through, he kind of introduced during his welcome. So I'm going to go through them relatively quickly and then get us to the real work of the day. So if I am a couple minutes before, I don't think I will. That never happens. So, so way back in 2003, the National Science Foundation said this: in the coming decades, the public will more frequently be called upon to understand complex environmental issues, assess risk, evaluate proposed environmental plans, and understand how individual decisions affect the environment at local and global scales. And this is the important part for my mind. Creating a scientifically informed citizenry requires a concerted, systematic approach to environmental education. And as Nick just pointed out, that's what this effort's been doing since 1998, is setting up that concerted, systematic approach to environmental education here in the Chesapeake. Again, don't want to beat a dead horse, but quickly running through the history of environmental education in the region. Back in 1998, the Directive 98-1 was signed by the governors. What that essentially did was invite the Departments of Education to become active partners in the Bay program and also establish interagency working groups in each of the jurisdictions. By jurisdiction, we just mean the states plus D.C. In 2000, the Keystone Commitment was endorsed by the governors. That was to provide every student in the watershed with a meaningful watershed educational experience, or the unfortunate acronym MEWE, prior to graduation. Most states at this point have a elementary, middle, and high school component to that. And in 2002, BUET was established, but this is the point where we're going to switch over to MEWE.
Okay.
So this is what is a MEWE? What do we mean when we say MEWE?
This isn't the one that I made, is it?
It is. You'll see Kevin's
actors. If you try to click it one more time and see if that does. Okay. I'm sorry. Not quite sure.
It's actually not. It's the link.
If you.
It's not embedded. It's okay. Don't worry about it. We will come back to that later. It'll be a lunchtime. We'll kick off the afternoon. So forward to it. So what is a MEWE? The experiences are investigative, are project oriented. They should consist of preparation, action, the outdoor action component, and reflection, analysis, and reporting in the classroom. They're an integral part of the instructional program, meaning that they are part of what the students are learning in the classroom. They're also part of a sustained activity. That means that they don't just happen once. They happen over the course of a semester or hopefully a year, and then they occur throughout a student's academic tenure. They consider the watershed as a system, so we don't have to necessarily go out in the bay. They can talk about land issues. They can talk about any number of important environmental issues, but they talk about it in the context of an earth system. They involve external sharing and communication, so the students have to tell people about and their community about what they learned. They're enhanced by natural resource personnel, and they are for all students. People with special needs, gifted students, English is a second language, all students need to be exposed to this. The MEWE evaluation, we have Michaela and Anita with us today who completed this evaluation for us. It was to determine if this model actually increases stewardship ethic and academic achievement of students. It was funded by NOAA, the Trust, as well as Keith Campbell Foundation. And what we learned is that it works, in essence. Students receiving this sort of experience do increase their intention to act, knowledge of issues, and knowledge of actions that they can take to engage and protect the watershed. Teachers also increase their confidence in being able to go outdoors and deliver this sort of experience, and they're more likely to do it, so win-win there. In 2002, NOAA BUET started, and that was, up until that point, MEWE was an unfunded mandate. It said, we should do this, and states were like, great. We don't have any money. So BUET started as a $3.5 million program in a good year, more likely in recent years about a $2 million federal program. It has been consistently funded since 2002, so it has provided a consistent source of funding for this meaningful watershed educational experience. The grants are generally about $75,000 to about $200,000, and it's evolved over time to really look at system implementation. So at the local education agencies, really getting them to do system-wide implementation of the meaningful watershed educational experience. 2005, we said, okay, we need to figure out who's doing this, where's it happening. In 2008-2009, about 80% of students were getting this sort of experience. And you can see the blue right there is Maryland, the green is Pennsylvania, and the yellow is Virginia. This looks great, right? About 80% of 3 million students, that's good. But states are using different tracking mechanisms. It's also unclear if the people that were responding to these surveys actually understood what we were asking, if they really knew what a meaningful watershed educational experience was, or were the kids just going outside on their schoolyard, which is great, but not really part of that comprehensive program that we're looking for. And also the quality of experiences were highly variable. We had no way of really looking at, you know, how deep was that experience that the students were getting. 2010, we had the executive order. It wasn't in the proclamation signed by President Obama in 2009, but in 2010, the implementation strategy fixed that. And there was a whole citizen stewardship component that asked us to develop this environmental literacy strategy. And I think you all have a copy of that on your table. And what did this strategy do? It significantly expands federal support for the environmental literacy efforts and the meaningful watershed educational experience here. We went around and we sat down with people like Maria Arnold in the back and any number of people, NASA, NOAA, NSF, and we said, what do you have that can support environmental education in our schools? We inventoried that, and then we came up with strategies for getting that to the states. So it really looks at that federal-state interaction and says, how can we do a better job? And it also recognizes that in order to implement an effective, meaningful watershed educational experience strategy, it's not just about the students. It's about the educators, it's about the students, and it's about the school environment. Again, these are on your table. The goals and outcomes are on the table. But it looks at those students, those educators, those schools, and then also us. How do we as an education community come together to do things like this best practices, metrics, and things that are important to support this effort? This is not just a federal effort. It's not just a state effort. It's everybody working together. It is NAAA affiliate groups. It's state departments of education and natural resource agencies. It's the U.S. Department of Education, who hopefully right now she's logged onto the webinar. She can't be here in person today. It's federal natural resource agencies as well, all working together towards a common set of goals and outcomes. So that strategy that you have in front of you, the goals and outcomes we've all bought into together. I have a signature page that shows everybody who's bought into that set of goals and outcomes. Then we all have different strategies. So there's a role that the federal government plays. There's a role that the states play. There's a role that the NAAA affiliates and other nonprofits can play in that. So we have individual strategies that we've developed to support that. And then down here at the bottom, these shared metrics, that's what we're here to talk about today. We want to have the shared metrics because we all know what you're tracking is ultimately what you're doing. It's what guiding what you're doing. The NAAA Mid-Atlantic groups came together. That's the Mayo, VRUEC, DCEEC, PAE, West Virginia, all of the states, Environmental Education Association is essentially what that is. They came up and said, okay, we have these common goals and outcomes, and they actually helped us develop those as well. Now what are we doing? So there's the strategy that they just put out in the summer of 2012 that says what they're going to do. It largely focuses on implementation and program development, mostly teacher professional development, school greening, and then how are they going to do outdoor student programs. Also, the Bay Trust has a new EPA award that is going to help support that effort in providing capacity building grants to organizations working on priorities such as that. Also, 47 states around the country, and somebody here knows way more about the number and where we are with this than I do, Don and others. But around that amount, they're working on developing their state environmental literacy plan. So that's almost everyone, right? Almost everyone around the country is thinking about this sort of thing, which is a pretty exciting time to be in environmental education. Back in 2008, NAAA put together this document. I have a copy of it back on my table if anybody needs to reference it during the course of of this workshop, but it said this is what a state environmental literacy program should have in it.
I didn't do that
right. I didn't even try.
So what does that look like here in the Mid-Atlantic region? Maryland has had theirs in place since 2009. They also have the associated graduation requirement in place just from last year, and they're talking about what does that mean now. And there have been a series of meetings with local education agencies and school divisions trying to figure out what does that look like. There's rubrics in place. Gary just hosted a very exciting conference at the beginning of August with all the LEAs coming together and talking about, okay, we have this requirement, now what do we do? How do we meet that requirement? District of Columbia, yay, theirs went up to the City Council in June 2012. Congratulations, girls. I don't know, has it been signed off yet?
As far as I know, it's just there. It was, and we're working on implementation of it. So.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. So that's very exciting news. Pennsylvania also this summer established theirs and in August, just last month. And Jack is on that group, Jack Barster back in the back. Delaware's is coming October 1. I hear that it's finished. It's just waiting for Richard Louvre to come and say that it's finished. So that's an exciting thing happening October 1st. Virginia has a longstanding environmental education business plan that they've been updating to kind of meet the same goals and outcomes of the Mid-Atlantic strategy, so that's exciting. And West Virginia's starting down that path as well, so it's very exciting. And they have a green school certification program that they have they've started to pull together and submitted some things to the U.S. Green Ribbon Schools program. So that's a very exciting work going on in West Virginia as well. Keith is speaking. I don't have control anymore.
Sorry, I'm not sure what happened.
Maybe just click on it. So now what? Why are we here? So what we want to do is refine the meaningful watershed educational experience definition based upon the best practices that we're going to start the conversation about today. And we want to refine that meaningful watershed educational experience with respect to those students, educators, and schools. So right now it's primarily focused on students and what students need to do, but we want to broaden that. We understand that it takes all those components to really graduate environmentally literate students. We also need to establish metrics or indicators, whatever word you'd like to use, or tracking systems or whatever, to figure out how the meaningful watershed educational experience best practices are being implemented, where are they being implemented, you know, and provide a little bit of granularity to just are they getting meaningful watershed educational experiences. We want to ask some questions with respect to what sorts of experiences are the students getting, what do the schools have. What sorts of professional development are the teachers getting? And then also, we need a plan for getting the tools and training out to the educators to make sure that these are being implemented. Any questions on that? We just wanted to make sure everybody had kind of a common understanding of where we've been and where we're going. Jamie's going to really start to go through what do the products look like and what are we going to work on in the next couple of days. But any questions about the background before I retreat to my seat in the back before someone takes me?
When you have the meaningful water, what's the first E?
MeWe.
Yes, if you have the MeWe.
Educational.
For the states that are doing this, full blown, is it all students, all grade levels, where necessary, being transported from their schools to a place where they're at a creek or a stream or a bay? To experiences, or are they being modified somehow for students who do not have ready access to those kinds of water features?
I think, and Gary and Barb, you can certainly provide more detail, but in general, there is a recognition that every student every year, even in the state of Maryland, cannot mean transportation to a field experience, you know, a bay experience that is just cost prohibitive. Mm-hmm. So they are, you know, using the school grounds and other opportunities that you can walk to in order to really make a full suite of 13 or more experiences over a student's career. Barb?
I was just going to say, in Virginia, what we're trying to do is say that every student in elementary will have one at least one really good, meaningful watershed.
In their entire elementary?
In their elementary career. And in elementary, we focus more on the schoolyard, the environment around the school. Middle school, they once again will have an experience, and we do try to have some kind of a, it could be a stream that's very close to the school, but it could also entail travel, and same with the high school. It's aligned with our curriculum, with our standards within the state, and so that they're not getting the same thing every year. You know, that it's a progressional type of thing. So.
I'm the last one to offer a comment about this, but let me throw this out. Under the Clean Water Act 319 grants, you can actually get funding to support the installation of things like rain gardens at schools. And not only does it end up being a meaningful experience for the kids, because they help design it, they do the plantings, they see how you're redirecting stormwater, but it actually ends up being obviously a good thing for the environment. I was involved in a number of projects when I was with a consulting firm over in Delaware, where that funding was used at schools and libraries to put in rain gardens. And usually in older towns that don't have a stormwater system, it's a straight shot to the water body. Redirecting that to a rain garden is good for the local environment.
Any last questions?